All right. Say something.
Testing. Test.
That's the best you could come up with. Fine. That's good enough. Let me just put the mic there. Goddamn. Nothing's ever easy. Hello, can you hear me?
Testing.
You already said testing. All right. This is too much. Too much. All right. What the hell? All right, you all set to talk about something good?
Throw it at me.
All right, let's go. Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Power Cosmic Podcast, the only podcast that has more episodes than listeners. I'm your host, Mitchell A.S. Halleck, producer of the world's greatest Comic-Con, coming up in less than 2 months, right here in Connecticut, at the Mohegan Sun Expo Center, the biggest mother-humping thing you ever seen on the face of the earth. Comic book creators, artists, actors, dealers, toys, cosplayers, and more all can be yours for a mere $30 or order tickets soon. And speaking about ordering tickets, you can get some every Sunday if you happen to be at the Raynham Flea Market and you go by booth A89 and 90, because the other person on this podcast, Mr. John Cimino, will be glad to take your money and give you some tickets to Terrificon. Is that not right, Johnny?
That's right. Tickets to Terrifica.
That's right. Also, it's been a hectic week, John. Now that summer's here, everything is going on, running around, graduations, people are busy, picnics, fireworks, all kind of nuttiness. So let me think of something you and I can talk about, because last week, as I mentioned to you, was our highest rated episode ever. And we talked about nothing, actually. I can't even remember what it was about, but that's good. That's what people want. They want to eavesdrop on a dull conversation as they pass their mundane lives away.
Mundane.
I was going to say mundane, but that's another story. All right. Summertime. And about 2 years ago, you and I were sweating. I was sweating. You were just glistening out in the hot sun as we ate food and things fell out of my mouth. And we talked about... We were going to flea markets, and we were just sitting there at a roadside outdoor diner. It was really nice.
Wait. Let me just embellish on that a little bit. When Mitch said things falling out of his mouth, 3 years ago, no, 2 years ago at Terrificon, Mitch always does like a, on Friday you do like a, you know, you take all your staff out to like a dinner, you know, like, because it's a big show, the next 3 days are going to be, you know, hectic and all that stuff, but you know, something out of the kindness of your black heart. And I'm walking in, I think with Roger, Road Warrior Animal, and a bunch of other people, and I look over and I see Mitch, he's sitting there talking to these guys, and he's eating, and I just see these chunks of food just flying It's my, well, he's trying to be some big shot, and I was just like, oh my God. just chew the food, swallow it, then talk. That's what I thought in my head. I don't know. They look like the size of hash browns.
I was trying to multitask, okay?
And it was like, you're trying to, I could tell, like, you know, you're stressing about this. So much happening.
Yeah.
He couldn't even chew his food. I just happened to look over and I see him talking, trying to be all professional. These chunks.
Stop.
Oh, it was hilarious. I think they were like potatoes.
Look.
What hash browns? Potato puffs.
I don't know what they were. All I'm saying is there's not enough time in the day. Okay? I mean, I got a lot of stuff to do, and, you know, I got piles of... What?
It was like I just looked at you at the perfect time.
All right. Enough. Look, I was just running around the house now, trying to get the place somewhat in order. The dining room has become like a storage unit here, which is sad because I have a storage unit. I get the books, like you say, my pity buys. I get the comics. I have full intentions of reading most of them. And then what happens is life gets in the way. Usually Sunday nights were reserved to comic books, but then I'm working on stuff for the show. And they're just piling up, man. And I don't know. I'm whining about this, but still. And now I got HeroClix coming into the house because you got me on that new habit. I have an addictive personality. We don't need to introduce more addictive things into my life. Do you understand?
Oh, yeah, I know. I get you.
And then last night, you're having trauma because you got together with a couple friends to do some hero clicks, and you're giving me updates what's going on. You had to hang your head low today because your hero clicks Punisher battle van was destroyed, right?
Yeah, I lost. We did. I was with some six friends, and we put two maps together, and everybody had their team. We did 1,000-point teams, so everybody had these humongous teams. And it was like a four-hour game. You know, we don't play like, you know, we're trying to do all the... We play for fun, and we try to do things out of the ordinary. You know, we don't care about, oh, this strategy, that strategy. You know, like, let's have fun. But I was one of the... I came down to the last two, and I lost. But once my Hulk got defeated by Mangog, which bothered me, it was over. And then they just pecked away my last guys that were on that were hurting. But I'll tell you, it was fun to play again. And yes, I was keeping updates on you. And don't forget my other buddy John, who couldn't play. And he's texting me left and right saying, I want to play, I want to play. And I said, yeah, eventually. Yeah, so we're going to do a little get-together in Rhode Island, hopefully. Yeah.
We will get together soon. You'll know we'll have a good time then, Dad. You know, because Cats in a Cradle, HeroClix, it's addictive. I keep going on eBay and looking for obscure Marvel characters. I don't even care what kind of points they have. All I know is I got an army built up of Dum Dum Dugan, the 3D Man, and the Wizard. Okay? You can't beat that. Obviously, you can, actually. But it's been fun getting into this latest addiction that you've turned me on to. I just saw The Incredibles 2.
Didn't your wife show you had like a whole bunch on the table?
Yes, my wife, I just celebrated 25 years of marriage 2 days ago. And the other day she sees all these little boxes coming in. And she's like, because they come small. I'm talking little tiny boxes about the size of a watch or something. And she goes, okay, what is all this now? I said, it's HeroClix. She goes, how much are we spending on this? I go, honestly, it's only about $2 or $3. It's less than a comic book, most of them. And she goes, why? And I go, well, John, me, and Matt Herring and his friend John and Keith, we're all planning on getting together and sitting there and having a whole day where we do just nothing but HeroClix. And the look on her face was a combination of disgust and sadness and just, I don't know. I think it's a good thing we have two kids. I don't think there's any chance of me ever having any relations again with this woman. But anyway, that's my life. What else is happening here? I just got me off. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I don't know where I was talking. I was talking about the ADD sponsorship of the Power Cosmic is going through the roof lately. The only podcast brought to you by Ridlin. It keeps you focused. and God forbid we have notes. I did notes once on the show. I wrote down topics. And
I think I even yelled at you at the end of the last show we did because we were so... I go, Mitch, you need to put bullet points to keep us both on track because we both go everywhere.
Well, no, I listened back afterwards and I listened to certain trains of thought and I go, oh, where are we going with that? And we never go anywhere. So I'm like, oh, my. I used to have like an idea what we were going to do, but it seems that people like the free thought. They like the freewheeling. I don't know why. They just do. All right. So let me see. Well, I'll come up with good stuff. Like you and I were driving the other day. I had you on speaker and I go, why are we talking about this? And you just like, I went to a con this weekend. I went to Eternal Con in Long Island. And I saw
over there at Eternal, right?
Yeah, Brandon Ralph was there, the AKA the boring Superman from Superman Returns. Who else was it? Michael Cudlitz from The Walking Dead, nice guy. He was at my show a couple years ago. William Shatner, Ursa was there, and Nan from the Superman 2 movie. Lou Ferrigno, how could I forget Lou Ferrigno? Oh my God, yeah, Lou Ferrigno. And it wasn't a lot of comic book creators, though. I saw Larry Hama, and that's about it. And a lot, no big Marvel names were there. But I did buy a replica of a Don Post Halloween mask that you didn't even know about, and I called you about it. And
Don Post? Ben Cooper.
Ben Cooper. I'm sorry, I stumped you. It was the replica of those little plastic masks we used to get as kids, but it has a Velcro strap on the back, so you're not going to get the elastic whipping around and taking your eye out like the
Well, let me throw that out there. I mean, it was, like, I guess Ruby's produces it, but they're making the traditional vacuum, like, you know, just the mask of the superhero.
Vacuum formed, I believe it is.
Yeah, vacuum formed, but they're trying to do it in the traditional Ben Cooper way where they had the box. I thought that was so cool. When you showed me that, it blew me away because, yeah, I didn't see it. It's my problem not being in the mix.
Well, the thing of it is, I kind of thought this might have been a tie-in to the Spider-Man Homecoming movie last year, because the four characters they have are Captain America, Hulk, Thor, and Iron Man. And I'm like, that's what the bank robbers were wearing when Spider-Man interrupts them last year. So I'm like, oh, maybe this was designed, because it did come out last year.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They look like the ones.
You kept saying that to me, and I didn't understand what the hell you were talking about. Now I get it. That's right. When these.
Yeah, they're not the real Avengers, you know, that type of thing. Because the thing that gives it away is I don't think Ben Cooper ever made a Thor or an Iron Man costume.
Oh, no, yes, they did in the 60s, yeah.
Oh, they made a Thor one, too?
Yeah, Thor was for 3 years, 66, 67, and 68. Iron Man, yeah, well, that's where they...
Oh, all right, because I was...
There was.
I was beginning to think it was something that they just came up with, because I knew they had Cap, and I knew they had the Hulk, but... And the good thing about these masks is they have a little piece of foam right around the eyes, and where the nose is, so you don't cut your face to ribbons, because that was the other thing about those masks. Not only would the elastic band of death hit you in the eye, but the rough edges around the eyes and the mouth were like razor blades.
The anchors you would get at the end of the night when you would just, your tongue, you keep sticking.
Oh, you put your tongue,
that little,
yes.
That nudge.
Oh, it was not a fun time at all. Not a fun time at all. So anyway, that was a cool purchase. Did I pick up anything else? No, and then we went to Long Island. I got to tell you, Long Island is the home of the comic book store. Every 2 to 3 miles, there is another comic book shop. We hit 10 comic book shops from 2 o'clock to 7 o'clock on Saturday, dropping off Terrificon posters, Terrificon flyers. It was nice. I'd walk in, people recognized me. Some guys had booths at my shows in the past. Then we went over to the Bronx and talked to them for a while, dropped some flyers off there. But the thing of it is, all these comic book stores were all different, but they were all the same. Like, one was really dusty and cramped, and you could barely move, like, only one person down the aisle at one time. And I found some HeroClix there. I sent you a picture of the Hulk one. One was Spartan, clean as a whistle, no dust, like, polished floors. It was very, very well kept. Very impressed on that one. And then you go in a couple others, and there's kids playing Pokemon and Magic the Gathering, so it was more of a gaming card store. But all of them were comic book shops.
Well, isn't the birth of comics... we know this for a fact that, you know, New York is a comic-buying town. It's right. Like, it's a comic town. But is the birth of comics in New York?
Well, the actual first recognized American comic book takes place in 1934 in Waterbury, Connecticut at Eastern Color Press, when Max Gaines, who's the father of Gaines that did the Mad Magazines, he comes up, he just takes the newspaper, folds it in half, folds it again, brings it down to about an 8.5 by 11, and then trims the edges and staples it. All he did was take the Sunday funnies, the color ones, and put them in a book form. And it was called Funnies on Parade, if I'm not mistaken. And that was the very first comic. But, you know, you hit on a point. You know what it is? I think all the writers and the artists lived in Long Island. Stan Lee, Jack Kirby.
Yeah, they were all John the Jews. Marita. They were all the Jews that couldn't get the jobs, like in the advertising agencies and all that stuff, that they comics were like the second the second tier thing. And they're the guys that did the greatest creations ever.
That's what they must have done, because when you're in Long Island, you're only like 30, 40 minutes out of New York, if that. It's a train ride. So they probably just commuted every day. So maybe that's why a lot of these shops popped up, because a lot of the guys that, you know, worked in the city lived over there. So I don't know. I still know it's the home of people like Billy Tucci, Peter David, John Romita Jr., Al Milgram. There's a lot that still live over there. So
yeah.
But it was fun, though. There was a lot of the old-time stuff that you collect and I collect, I didn't see any of that. Most of it was modern. A lot of it was Funko Pops, a lot of action figures. None of that retro stuff. I don't think you can go into many stores. I do know the Outer Limits in your hometown there of Waltham over on Moody Street.
Yeah.
That guy has a lot of old stuff, you know?
Well, and to throw this out at you, when there was a big article that they did, the top 25 greatest comic book stores in America, and Outer Limits was, I think, number 14.
Really?
Yeah, it was ranking in them. And down the street in Arlington, now they're in Cambridge, Kamikaze, who was literally an hour away, 40 minutes away from Steve and literally 20 minutes from me, and I go see them all the time, great guys down there. They were number 25.
Oh, wow. I see. When was that article? Because I would like to read that.
Oh, yeah, I'll send it to you. It was actually earlier this year. I saw it, Steve. I thought that was cool. And so two of the best in America were right there. Well, you got to remember, though, the thing about Steve, like, he's the first comic book store I ever went to, you know, and he started 30, 40 years ago. He's been around forever. But he just, there's a lot of good old school stuff in the Massachusetts area, especially around Waltham and the surrounding towns, all those cool toys and all that stuff. But and a lot of those warehouses, you got to remember, Milton Bradley is close by. That was like near Beverly. That was like in Gloucester. I forget exactly where it was. But then you had all those companies that made the Presto Magics, the blow molds, the color forms. All those companies are in Massachusetts. So all those old school toys that we grew up with, they were all from Massachusetts.
Well,
so
yeah,
a lot of that stuff.
And not to dismiss my home state here, Connecticut, we still have the Lego Factory. We have the Wiffle Ball Factory, which is right down the road from me in Shelton, Connecticut, the Wiffle Ball. Pez, I was just there a couple weeks ago, the Pez Factory is in Orange, Connecticut. Erector Sets was from my hometown of New Haven, Erector Square. They used to make those. It's not a comic book, but lollipops were created in New Haven. The Frisbees, because the Frisbee Pie Company was there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Yeah. They used to, the Yaleys and the college guys would just take the metal plates that they would bake the Frisbee pies in and start throwing them around after they were done at their picnics. And
that's
where the Frisbee came from. There you go.
It's kind of cool because when I got older and I'm getting all these retro things, when you're young, you don't even know, you just get the toys and you love it. But
yeah.
When I'm looking at it and I'll be like, oh, it was made from Watertown, Massachusetts. I'm like, that was like 5 minutes away from me, and I could not believe how many toys were generated, a lot of ink by numbers stuff. They were all generated in Massachusetts. It's just funny. You don't realize they're as close as they are.
Oh, and then in Rhode Island, we got Hasbro, you know, the home of G.I. Joe, Pawtucket, Rhode Island over there. That's
right. Hasbro, and still going strong, one of the biggest and most prosperous toy companies
in the world.
Ever.
And I think... I don't know. Yeah, I never really thought about it, but I guess this New England area is a big thing for toys because Mego was out in Long Island, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's what kills me. I forgot
Ben
to make
Cooper. Ben Cooper was in Brooklyn? Yeah, Brooklyn.
I forgot. I was supposed to go meet Marty Abrams at that damn show. That was the reason why I went to Eternal Con. I couldn't find him, the Mego guy.
Yeah, but when you shake Marty Abrams' hand because he's connected, you got to have a fin in your, you know.
You got to palm him some money. I get it.
Yeah.
So anyway, all right, today's topic will be the best comic book stores that we have seen. Of course, in New York, you got Midtown Comics, which is like the Walmart of comics. It's got everything. Two floors. Statues, back issues, trades, T-shirts, toys, clothes. They got everything, all right?
But, Mitch, let me ask you a question about that. When you go into a comic book store,
right,
do you like a contemporary one, or do you like an old-school gritty one? One that looks like Frank Cass, you know?
I actually prefer, like you just said, the old-school one. That has, like, you got to rummage through stuff because I always think that's where you're going to find some gold, You know?
That's what Unlimited, that's what that has, like, in abundance. Like, he has, like, stacks of stuff. You know, stuff is everywhere. I mean, it's organized, but it's still everywhere.
Yeah.
You could get, like, a stack of, like, Fangora or Monsters Unleashed. It's just, but all the paperbacks and all the dusty stuff. But, like, you're looking through this, it's like, holy moly.
You know what Outer Limits has that I always think is cool? He has the wooden newsstand racks. From the,
late 50s. Yeah, he wouldn't 50s. Sell me that. From the 50s.
Those yeah, the 50s and 60s that say, hey, kids, look, DC Comics, or get your DC Comics here, or something like that. I always thought that's cool. But right here in Connecticut, I don't know, my one that I go to that I'll be there in about an hour or so is Cave Comics here in Newtown, Connecticut. And the best thing about them is they have still, they had a larger display. He has all original sketches of Batman because the shop was called or Batcave Comics or Cave Comics. So he's a huge Batman fan, Pat, that runs it. So his walls, and it was in the old train depot that was like a historic landmark. It dates back to the 1800s. And that's where his shop was located, inside the old train station. So he has these huge 20, 30 foot high ceilings over there. So he would have it floor to ceiling, all sketches from Neil Adams, John Byrne, John Bolton, anybody you can think of. I think he has a John Buscema. Any artist he encountered, and he's been collecting comics. I think Pat's like 65, so he goes way back to the 70s and such. He would get a sketch of Batman from them and save him. And it's just a fun to go in there, just like a museum. If it's the Batman Original Art Museum, if you want to get in there. He's got every single artist you can imagine. And he's got a sketch by him. So that's fun.
I would think the East Coast has the best comic book stores. Because I'm going to tell you, when I went down south, and I used to tour, but I remember going recently with Roy last year. When I went down to go see him, we did a private signing. And he took me to a few comic shops that were like in the Carolinas there. Yeah. Okay, they don't even... Now, this is funny. They're comic shops, but they don't even get the new comics.
Oh, yeah, like, no, there's a place in Bridgeport that Ordway and I go to, Black Cat Comics, where he stopped getting new books, but he just has boxes and long boxes of all kinds of silver. Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. He just had, like, magazines, comics, and I said, with Roy, we're walking around, and I asked the guy, and I said, where are the new comics? He goes, no, we don't get them. And I was just flabbergasted.
No, that is weird. I've actually gone to two. There's another one near you in Salem, Massachusetts. Right near Harrison's Comics. Harrison's is another big two-floor store up there in Salem. But right around the corner from him, there was a shop I went into. Tons of stuff, but no new comics.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, they were people that actually broke off from Larry.
Oh, were they? I couldn't understand the story.
But yeah, and it's in that kind of like plaza, makeshift mall type thing. Yeah, it's the weirdest thing. They have a comic store, and it's like no new comics. It's just kind of like stuff.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, you don't have the type of clientele for that, but I just thought that was...
I'll tell you, one of the best I went to was in Long Island, was called Fourth World Comics. They've been around for like 35 years. That store has everything. They have HeroClix, they have figures, they have gaming and stuff, but they have a huge selection of comic books. So that I think maybe because you have to be around a long time. And you build up that inventory. That's what it is. Maybe that's why they have so much cool stuff, is because they've been around for 30 years and they don't get rid of stuff. But when I was a kid, comic book stores were like non-existent. I'm talking the 70s. There was a shop in New Haven right near Yale called the Paperback Trader, where I used to get my comics. That's the first time I discovered comics coming in every Wednesday. I used to just go to the pharmacy, the 7-Elevens, and pick up books off the spinner rack. But this was a real store that you could go in, and the books were on the shelves, and he had some back issues. And I used to go in there. Mike Zeck lived in New Haven. He would go shopping for his books there. And what was the other one? Oh, Book World was open. Here's something you don't see anymore. A bookstore open 24 hours a day, 365 days a year.
24 hours?
Oh, it was. Oh, you'd go there at 3 or 4 in the morning, and it would be open. And it was just like a... Maybe they had them in New York. Maybe they still do. But this was in New Haven, right near all the colleges. And you'd go in there at 2 in the morning after the bars closed, and the bookstore would be open, and the guy would be reading. And they had walls of paperback books and novels, but they had a great comic book selection. And I used to go in there when I was in college, like literally 2 or 3 in the morning, because nothing was open except maybe a diner. And you'd go in there and there'd be guys reading comics and stuff. It was just so out there. But in that shop would be Gary Trudeau, who was the cartoonist from Doonesbury. Wendy and Richard Pinney. Richard Pinney is from New Haven, the ElfQuest guy. He would be in that shop.
Okay.
It was just so weird, though, because nowadays you can't even think of a bookstore being open, let alone 24/7.
And let alone a bookstore. I mean, like...
Yeah, right?
Yeah. They don't think, yeah, because I assume, other than like a Barnes & Noble, I mean, the Kindle and all that other stuff has kind of killed bookstores and all that
stuff.
Yeah,
that's the sad place that we live in now. I'm not a huge fan of the digital books. I tried a couple times to do it. You just kind of move your finger around.
No, it doesn't.
It's all right.
You know what? I don't like it. But you have to say this, though, for the new generation of kids that have not gonna, you know, not growing up with that many books, and they're growing up with that, I they don't have any attachment to it. But something about, you know, holding the newspapers or the comic or the book in your hand, there's some sort of energy there that, like, it's just a lot more, for me, it's just, you know, it's just part of it. A Kindle seems so far away.
Yeah, like it seems like I'm, yeah, it's just, yeah. You know, it's the same stories. I haven't tried to go back and read old books. I know you can go to Marvel and subscribe, and you can get the whole library. You can get all the books from the 60s and the 50s and all that, maybe. But I haven't gone and tried to read.
Like, no, I can see the... like, if you get, like, say you have 1,000 comics, you have it on your phone. I mean, like, I can see how...
Oh, yeah, like, yeah, yeah, like music.
The convenience of that, because... You know, you don't have all these stacks of comic books in your house.
I know.
I'm sure your wife would love that.
I know, because the other day she just looked and I had a stack on the end table that I planned on reading, and she just like shook her head. They do pile up. I mean, come on, we got to admit.
But let me ask you this, Mitch. Yeah. I've read 1 or 2 digital comics, and I was just like, I don't really read the comics anyways. But it didn't work for me.
No, it didn't. I like the fact that you could zoom in on the artwork and you could see things and the way it moved better.
You're just so disconnected. I don't know.
Yeah, it didn't seem real. I don't know. Maybe people enjoy reading them. I don't know. I know Brian Letendry from the long gone Secret Identity podcast. He totally switched over to digital books. He stopped picking up paper books. So.
Yeah, and it's cheaper too, correct?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, it's cheaper. Yeah.
Because you got no paper, no.
But there's no collectability, though. I mean, there's no, like, it's not worth anything.
Okay, yeah, true, but think about it this way. There's only monetary gain collectability today, because you get a variant cover that's worth $100, and in another month it's worth $0. So, I mean, is it really different? You know, I mean, I don't know. That's kind of a weird question. Mitch, do you ever think digital comics will be collectible?
No. It's not real. It's like a video game, like the old video games, the cartridges, people sell them at GamerCon that I do.
But is there any limited? There's no limit to
any digital comics.
Like, it could be 1 billion people that want it and they'll get it.
Yeah, it's an electronic file. You can copy and burn it. There's no such thing.
It's a
way to distribute the stuff. I mean, you could talk to the creators at the shows if they like it, because it's, if you're a new comic book writer or artist, it's an opportunity to get your material out to the audience more than ever before. You don't have to go through Diamond to get distributed. You could just upload it and put a PDF out and people can get it. So I guess it's like music. Nowadays, you don't have to have a rock album. There's no such thing as an album or a CD or a tape.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, you know, when you listen to a record with the mono and stuff, it's like it's so much, it's a different sound. It's like you're almost there. But when you get the digital, it's like the highs and lows are gone, and it's not the same sound.
Yeah, I know when people started saying that, when CDs started coming around, I didn't get it. But now I'll hear music, and it just doesn't sound... It sounds flat, if that makes any sense.
Put on a power record or put on a real record, like a record,
and
you will hear the difference. You're right. I never got it when I was younger either, now you're like, oh, my God.
No, I could definitely tell the difference between a vinyl and a CD, because it's just not the same.
No, it isn't.
It's hard to describe. It's like plastic versus...
I say it's like having sex with a condom.
Yeah. I was going to say it's like plastic versus like cotton.
It's but just having, like you're yeah. in there, but are you really?
Who? What? Okay, so you're...
But
wait a minute. Stop.
There's a distance there.
So you're equating digital comic books with having safe sex.
Yeah, not relentless, visceral, savage sex, yeah.
So when I go pick up my paper comics and rip into them, that is like I'm in heat.
No, that's like having sex with a girl that you're having sex with, but she had a sex, it's like a hooker. She's had sex with everybody. And I'll tell you why. Wait, let me tell you why.
What is happening here?
No, but let me tell you why. When you buy a comic today, it's just not the same because those comics are so mass-produced and so dumbed down, and the depression, the decompression storytelling, you know that those comics like are not the same as the other stuff. The older stuff, because they're just so mass produced. So like I said, you're getting those comics and you're paying for those, but it's like it's not the same. So it's like a girl like you're having sex with, but she's had sex with everybody, so it's kind of like it's not special.
Okay. I have no idea what the hell you're talking about. I'm not even going to get into it. So you're saying basically, today,
like I said, they're pity buys. You get them because you love the logos. You don't really care
about.
Wait,
so I'm having pity sex with comic books now?
Yeah. Well, she's giving you pity sex, and then at the end you want to cuddle, and she's like, "Is my 10 minutes are up? I gotta go." And you like, then you just cover yourself like all cold, like, "Oh my god." It was like you felt violated. That's what a new comic is. I discovered it, Mickey.
All I know is you seem to have a lot of knowledge about this subject matter. So that explains, like, most comic book stores. There was one in Stamford, Connecticut that went out of business recently called Timeless Journey. And it was right next door to what we would call an adult shop that had, like, like sexy negligees and oils and massage stuff.
What's going out there? Huge dildos.
Oh, will you stop? All right. Like, all right. They had that.
You went.
No. You would walk in, and it's like if you took a left, you went into the comic book shop, which was full of capes and cows and adventure. If you took a right, you went into whips, chains, and battery operated sexual devices. So. It was a very weird thing, but the way you just described comics, you've kind of molded those two areas together.
Well, let me throw this one at you.
I'm getting uncomfortable right now.
No, when I worked at the comic book store in Manchester, I don't want to say the names. I hated this. I don't think comics and sex shops should go together, but I'm going to tell you this. We had a sex shop like. That was behind a curtain. Like, you could get pornos and stuff. So
In the comic book store?
Yeah. I don't want to say the name of the shop and other, but I worked there for three years.
Go ahead.
Hold on. I worked there for 3 years. So basically, we were open till 10 o'clock, but from 10 to 10. And so I only worked there twice, Wednesdays and Thursdays, you know, when the new comics came in. But usually, you know, everybody got the comics. But literally from like 8 o'clock on, you got all the freaks and they would go in the back and we'd rent the pornos and all that stuff. And I didn't like that because, like I said, I don't think it would go together. But one more other story I want to tell you. Another comic book store that I don't want to name names, but they were next to a sex shop. And it was so funny because when I went into that sex shop with a bunch of friends, I looked on the board and it was pictures of all people with the, you know, when they get the porn stars and stuff, they come in. And I see all these pictures with the friggin' owner of the comic book store that is in there. And here I'm thinking, this comic book store guy's, he doesn't care about that stuff. Oh, boy. He was like in 50 of the 100 pictures.
So, all right. I got one better than
that's
that.
My story.
Years ago, when I'm working as a creative director...
Wait, was this Innocent Mitchie? Innocent Mitchie?
There's always Innocent Mitchie. There is no other Mitchie.
I know.
So stop it. So I'm sitting there and I'm looking for a copywriter. So I happen to tell some of the guys at the comic shop, because, you know, people read, they're well read and they know the English language, if they know of anybody looking for a copywriting job, because I need one for the catalog. So they said, oh, yeah, we'll ask around. So I get a resume from this young lady and I read the resume. It seems fine. And I mention it to somebody at the comic book store. And it's like I just It was like a fart in church. Everybody quieted and looked over. I go, why? What did I say? They go, I don't know if you want to hire that person. I go, why? What is it? They go, here. And they went to a website, and there she was in this whole S&M like series of photographs with the guy with the masks, with the zippers on the mouth, with the like whips and chains. I go, what the hell is this? And not only was it her, she was the model in it, but the guy I found out was her husband.
And
they used to be into the comic books. And this is what they were doing to make money on the side. They would like charge like $19 a month, and you'd pay money and you'd get to watch these pictures of this girl and, you know, God knows what else they were doing back then. And this is like 20 years ago. So I was like, oh my God, I was going to hire this person. Imagine that. You're like sitting in a meeting and like, oh, what are we talking about? Today's brainstorming meeting about this. Oh, by the way, Becky Sue, I happened to see you last night here with the whip and the chain. And I hope you got away from the bad postman or whatever. But so anyway, that was a comic book story because that guy, he was running that stuff out of the back door of the comic book shop, I had heard. He was doing stuff here in front selling comics, and in the back he was doing his little photo shoots with the stuff. So how creepy is that?
Yeah, like I said, when I was working at that comic store, after 8 o'clock, you got all the creeps. Like, they would come in, and you know exactly when they walked in the
door. Well, now I think about it. Book World was 24-7. They had sections, but I didn't go over because it's innocent, Mitchy. I was looking for Spider-Man, but there must have been somebody else looking for something else over there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, something else that sticks to you.
Oh, stop. Maybe that's why the sign said, please hold all books with both hands.
You know what, Mitchy? It's so funny, though, but you are so naive. I mean, like, once again, Marie Antoinette, Mitchy grew up in he went to a Catholic
school, St. Brendan School, Waylia, Ellsworth Avenue, New Haven, Connecticut.
But you lived there, I mean, and you kind of, you know, you went off, you never really went off the beaten path. You always, you know, you went to work, you worked hard, but like, you were kind of like,
I didn't turn into you.
No, I know, but you had this tunnel vision, and like, all this horrible stuff was probably going on around you, but you never saw it.
Yes.
Because mommy made your big boy meals, you read your comic books, you went to school, you know, you did stuff. And then years later, like, dude, you just walked through a minefield every day. You'd be like, I did?
No. Let me tell you, you can tell.
It's like Charlie Brown.
You can tell when I'm shocked by something because you'll hear me utter this one word. Really? And when I say really, it means I have no clue. I'm like, just like, what's going on? Really?
Oh my God. And how many times I'd be like, Mitch, come on, you're an idiot. He's like, I didn't know. And
I don't know. I don't look.
No, I know, but I'd always think I'd almost think that you're playing, but you're not.
No, I'm not. Here's the way I look at the world. I am an adult, and I do realize there's horrible things happening as we speak out in the world. There's slavery. There's torture, there's murder, there's drug dealing, there's every possible debauchery, everything on there. There's, as we speak on this show, on the dark web, which you can't get a 30-day trial to on Netflix, there's a whole other world. I found out about the dark web about a month ago. I was talking to somebody, I go, what do you mean they sell guns and stuff? The guy goes, you don't know about the dark web? I go, is that like a bad issue of Spider-Man? They're like, no, that's where they sell drugs and women and children and all this stuff is happening. I'm like, wait, what's going on? So yeah, they,
No, wait a second. People have to understand, when Mitchy gets confronted with like this type of stuff, your back straightens up and you kind of like, you get your eyes go wide and you kind of like, go. Okay, case in point, we're not going to say a name, but we were at this guy's place. A lot of people know him, but remember we were at his freaky house. And
all that. I know what you're talking about. Author of certain books.
Yeah, but don't say the name, but Mitch wouldn't even go inside the house. And then after, I go outside, I was like, what, Mitch? He goes, I'm not going out in there. It's like, your spider sense goes on, but like, you get very stiff and you get very quiet and your eyes like widen and it's like, all your senses are going off and you don't want
that. No,
like,
we went to this gentleman's house and we went to, he's a freaking nutcase. So we went into the nutball's house. It smells of pot. And I go, what's that smell? And I'm going to tell you, here's how stupid I am. I didn't realize pot smelled like skunks until like about a year ago. I was like, what is all that skunk around here? What is this? Somebody like running them over? And they're looking at me like, that's weed. I go, what kind of weed? So anyway, We go to his house. He's in his boxer shorts and a robe, and he's watching TV, Simpson cartoons, and he's out of his mind. And his house is just like decorated like a big comic book shop. It's got posters and comic books everywhere, and a drawing table, and it's just sad. And you,
he's showing me around, and Mitch goes, while he's showing me around,
I'm trying
Mitch
to get out of there.
No, he goes, yeah, the door's open, but he goes out the door and like waits in the hallway there. Like he would, it's like you couldn't even cross over.
No.
And let's not throw off that the guy even asked me to sleep over.
Oh, like, please. I would have found you in a dungeon. You would have been in a hole.
I know what would have happened. The roofies, I would have woken up in the middle of the night. I would have
never seen you again. You even have been like putting a drill bit in your forehead trying to pour hydrochloric acid and make you a sex slave.
But I go outside and I was like, Mitch, when finally I'm leaving, you were like, I'm not going in there.
And no!
You were so, even every part of your hair was stiff. And I was like,
I don't like to find out those things. But no, what I was trying to say is naive Mitchie at 51, soon to be 52, my God. I realize these things are going on, but you have to make a choice every day. You have to sit there and wallow in the evil of the world and just be totally depressed because it's never going to change, ever. Never going to get better. Or you don't put blinders on. You go, screw this. I'm going to make my little corner of the world the best it could be and make it, I don't know what's the word, amplify the things that I believe in, and I want it. So you come here. It is the land of, you know, comic books and fun and childhood innocence, okay? All right? I don't want to go into the dark side. I don't believe in it, all right?
But I swear to God, when anything like that turns up, Mitch gets so stiff.
I do.
And you go. Leave me for dead. You don't care. You just go.
No, I do. I do. Look, never took drugs, never did anything wrong, never got arrested, never did this, never went to court, never did anything, okay? And I don't mind it. I don't mind being the cautious man. I don't mind being 50, almost 52, and going, all right, that's fine. I've seen things. I've gone around the world. I've gone to volcanoes in Hawaii. I've gone to Rome. I've been places, but I like seeing the world with my eyes wide open and not walking around.
I know, but sometimes it's right in front of you, and I'll be like, Mitch, it's that. You'll be like, it is?
Really?
Yeah. I'll be like, yeah, you can't see it. It's like right there. And you're like, oh, my God, I didn't know.
And I got to tell you, there's nothing more disappointing to find out that these people that you've read their material or seen their movies turn out to be less than wholesome people, and you go nuts on that. I go, oh, so-and-so turned out to be like an alcoholic drug addict. You're like, what are you, stupid? Hollywood is just full of that. Why don't you believe this? I go, I believe the press releases.
Yeah, I know. Oh, my God. And sometimes you don't want to believe it. Like, that guy.
I don't.
You're like, no, he's not. You're like, you can't. I always tell Mitchie, love the movies for what they are, but don't go behind the scenes, because now we know what goes on behind the scenes. But Mitchie still has that that wanderlust.
You know when it really came to a head? I'll tell you. April 22nd, 1999. You know what that was? The day I met Harrison Ford, and I shook his hand. And it was the lamest, limpest handshake I ever had in my life. Oh, my God. It was like cold fish. I was like, oh, Indiana Jones, Han Solo. Put some grip into that, will you? What the hell, man?
Oh.
So disappointed. Harrison Ford, worst handshake ever.
But to go back to what we were talking about.
We were talking about comic book stores. I don't know how we got on this train.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. But okay, so you went into the comic book store. You got your new comics, correct?
I guess I don't even know what we're talking about. Sure, yeah. What happened then?
I know. I don't know. I don't get them anymore.
I go because I love going to the shop because, like you said, it's nostalgia. Every time I open that door, no matter how bad the comic books are, it still brings me back to that point in my life where that was the best day of the week, and that was the day. And
I'm agreeing with you. Because here's something I still do. Sometimes when life isn't going right, you know, and you feel a little down, I'll go to a comic book store, almost a sanctuary for me, and I'll just go and I'll just, like, look around, and I'll go to a random one. And you feel that type of relief because it was a time where all that pressure was gone. I used to say this about Out of Limits. I would call Steve Higgins, who's a great guy, who's the owner of Out of Limits. I called him the my local idol, because when you were a kid, he was the guy that had the keys to this. It was like the keys to Oz.
Yeah.
Like, I could not believe there was a store that had comic books and toys. It was like everything that was going on in your head, that he had the keys to that kingdom. So I used to look at Steve like he was this, like, God, because he was the owner of this thing. Yeah. And I still get that sometimes. I don't really buy anything, and I'm not really that impressed with the new stuff, but I'll go into a comic book store and I'll feel that, like, it takes away the pain. It's like sanctuary.
No, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. And I gotta admit, I do get that vibe now from some people, that when they recognize me as the guy who puts together the best comic cons in Connecticut,
yeah,
they do that. Oh my God, you're Mitch Halleck. And I look around like, yes, so? Like, oh, I just want to shake your hand, and oh, thank you so much. I go, for what? Oh, man, I had the greatest times at your shows and this and that. So there is a weird responsibility, if you want to call it, to, like, the everyday fan. They'll actually thank me and talk to me, and I'm always suspicious of everybody.
Well, you're the guy that has the keys to, like, that Oz. You're a fan that's kind of, you're going to give them.
I'm a fan that made it.
Yeah, and for the next 3 days, you're going to give them that world of everything that they grew up with.
I guess, yeah, and then I know, I get it, but...
No, because comic book stores do not have that type of... Like, it's almost like the cons of the new comic book store, because there's so many comic book stores. Now, you know, it was very uncommon when we were young.
They're not as special, yeah.
Right, so now that everybody has a comic book store, but now the Comic Con takes it to that next level, and where, oh, now I'm seeing the celebrities, I'm seeing those artists, I'm seeing those creators, I'm seeing all this stuff. So it's now you're in the middle of that world of Oz, and you're the guy that's opening it up to them with 3 days at Terrifica.
Yes,
at
the yes, yes.
Sun, baby. So that's the difference. And to take that a little bit further,
okay.
I actually feel that too when I'm with Roy. When I'm with Roy and all these people are coming up and he's signing, thousands of people signing all this stuff, I get what they're doing, because I sometimes get a little starstruck. It's like, now we're even deeper, because this is the guy that actually implemented those comic books.
Yeah.
That created that. So it's like, we are literally, Mitch, I must say, in the bowels,
yes,
of this stuff.
I like,
of Oz.
Yeah.
That is incredible. And let's be honest, me and you are like fans till we die. You cut us open, we got like comics. We bleed comic books and all this crap.
Yep.
And we'll die with it. But, like, to actually, like you said, you made it, I made it. Like, we're in the bowels. And it's kind of like, sometimes you step back and, like, oh, my God, I'm here. Like, this is Roy Thomas. This is Stan Lee. This is, these are, like, this is Joe Sinnott. This is Larry Lieber. And I'm like, I'm just sitting here with these guys. And it's like, what the hell am I doing here?
I believe I say that, too. So... We are bowels. We are in the bowels. And speaking of moving bowels, we got to wrap this up pretty soon because I have to go to my comic book store. It's almost 11 o'clock and they're almost open, and I got to get my fix like a junkie. What news can we talk about? All right. Since it's already been on the website since I put it up.
Oh, yeah. Throw it out there, Mitch.
All right. Today's big comic book announcement for the World of Terrific Con happening August 17th to the 19th. Tickets on sale. I got two things to tell you, kiddies. I put together a VIP package that'll be on sale shortly, which will be the Hero of the Universe VIP add-on package. What it is I was trying to get another guest. It fell through. I'll tell you who it was. John Leguizamo. We were going to do a Spawn reunion, and he was going to do a comedy routine on Saturday night, but it never came to fruition. So I called Sam Jones, a.k.a. Flash Gordon, and said, hey, if we do a screening of Flash Gordon, would you do a Q&A? He said, I'd love to do a Q&A. And I said, but then we got this after party on Saturday night with the Blues Brothers band and a DJ and trivia, and it goes to midnight, and it's all ages, so even the kids could come if they bring a guardian or a parent. So... I said, I want to do something. So for $25, you could buy it the day of the show, or you can buy it online soon. You're going to get the Hero of the Universe package. You get tickets to the Flash Gordon movie, the Q&A with Sam, ticket to the after party. You're going to get a print by Ordway, Jerry Ordway, now that he's back. And I'm going to throw in a fast pass, which means you could use it once. And if there's a long line for Roy or anybody, you could just give your fast pass and you get to cut to the front of the line real quick. So that's $25. All right, that's not bad. So the other big news is C.B. Cebulski, who is now the editor-in-chief of Marvel Comics, the comic books that we know and love. He took over in late 2017. He was also the guy in charge of their new talent program. He'd go around the world looking for new artists and writers. He also wrote several comic books over the years. The editor-in-chief of Marvel Comics, where's he going? To Terrific-Con. He will be there on Friday, Saturday. He's another Connecticut boy. He's right down the street in Easton, Connecticut. He born and raised, friends with my friend, the late great Dan Yance, best buddies. He is now coming to Terrific-Con. So ask him where Marvel Comics is going, what's going on. But the best thing is we have a panel called Marvel Comics, Then and Now.
First time ever with
editors-in-chief Roy Thomas. He took over from Stan Lee, the heir apparent, appointed by Stan the man himself back in the day, and now the present-day head of Marvel Comics, Mr. C.B. Cebulski, will be in a panel only at Terrific-Con. You're not going to find that in New York. You're going to have to find that in San Diego. You're not going to find that anywhere else around here.
Anywhere.
But at the Mohegan Sun, we're going to do it, I think, on August 18th. We'll do it on the Saturday. So C.B. Cebulski and Roy Thomas.
I've already told Roy he's looking forward to it. And a shout-out to Joey Caramagna, because the seeds were implemented with Joe. And he's pretty good friends with, Brett Bort and CB.
I
had him. He threw some heat down to CB. And then CB was looking at you at
East Coast. He came up.
And it's said and done. So Joey Caramagna, thank you.
So that'll be a Marvel team-up of epic proportions.
Ever!
So that's going to happen. So that's about it for this week's episode. Almost an hour-long nonsense of nothing, as usual, as we learned about sex shops, John's Secret World, Mitch's World of Innocence. And now I'm beginning to wonder what was going on at Book World at 2 in the morning when I was reading my comic.
Book World was something else.
I think it was Sex World. What?
No, and Mitch, maybe in a thing here, I just want to throw this about the panel. I was going to ask you this, might as well ask you on the air in front of our millions and millions and millions of
all
fans.
All three of them.
I was thinking, is there any way you can make that panel with CB and Roy an hour so they could talk
I could do whatever I want.
I was thinking they talk for a good 40 minutes and then the last maybe 20 minutes they do the Q&A. I mean, there's a lot there.
We could do a lot. We could make it a supersized spectacular. I'm the king of the nerds. I could do anything. I'm like the lizard king. Stop it. All right, we will do that. All right, let me go because God knows I might miss my variant copy of a comic book that I'll never read and just shove in the dining room, and my wife will throw it away after I'm gone, which could be any day now. Because I didn't do my exercise.
Oh, and you know what? And that's that.
And that's that.
This has been a production of Big Fedora Marketing, LLC. The folks that bring you the Terrific Comic-Con, GamerCon, and so much more. Thanks for listening.